Actors are waiting in the wings, at home, eager to see the seats filled again at the Evansville Civic Theater. The audience anxious too, hoping to share the magic of a live production. I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, my conversation with artistic director Kevin Roach. Kevin shares the colorful history of the community theater, some memorable productions, and even a ghost story or two. The Evansville Civic Theater is hoping to rebound after the COVID-19 shutdown, and we'll hear what's in the works, how you can get involved, either playing a role on stage, building a set, putting on makeup, or sewing a costume. Drama, music, and comedy. Civic Theater provides a creative playground for all ages. 2 Main Street is next, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management. From the WNIN Tri-State Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. The magic of live theater. Those anxious moments for cast and crew ready for the curtain to rise. And the anticipation of the audience, eager for an evening of entertainment, a drama, comedy, or a musical. Community theaters across the country have been dark for a year. Shows canceled or postponed. Actors waiting in the wings, and theatergoers missing out on some great performances. The Evansville Civic Theater has a 90-year-plus tradition, with all expectations of reaching that century mark. The saying is, the show must go on, but COVID-19 has certainly muted that theatrical battle cry, but not silenced it. Kevin Roach is the artistic director of the Evansville Civic Theater, and he is determined to raise the curtain once again. So, Kevin, welcome to 2 Main Street, and you have said that after 95 years, the Civic Theater could be forced to close. Is that still the case?
Well, that's, I hesitate to say forced to close. It's more like it's a reality that could happen. And we knew that when the pandemic hit, that, we can't have shows right now, or, we have to try to transition to a different kind of show. We all are optimistic. We all really want and honestly believe that the theater will survive. But it is a reality that we do have to acknowledge, is that, if we don't get the funding we need because we're a nonprofit, we would have to close. And that's not something we want to do. That's not something we plan to do. We're here to stay if we can.
And, of course, your revenue comes mostly from ticket sales.
Ticket sales and donations, really. I mean, that's pretty much it. And, we do some things like selling shirts during performances, and, we have little window decals and things like that. But other than donations and ticket sales, we don't have any other source of income.
Now, going into 2020, you had some plans for productions, and what happened to those?
Well, they were really just kind of put on the back burner because we had two shows in the previous season that we didn't get to do. And so we were presenting those. We did one show in December online, and we're presenting another one coming up in April online. We're still staying online, but we're hopeful. Fingers crossed, we can get back in there in the fall. But those shows that we were considering, we're considering for the following season. So I do know there's a couple of them that we are probably going to do, so I can't say until they've been announced. But
what are those shows that are going to, that you had, was it the Laramie Project?
Laramie Project went up in December. Mm-hmm. And we did that specifically because December is Matt Shepard's birthday, which the play is about him. And now we've got title of show, a musical, which is going to be interesting to do on camera, a musical. It's literally called title of show. Like, we've had so many people call, especially before COVID, and say, well, what's it called? And I'm like, no, that's what it's called, title of show. That'll be in April. And then we have a couple shows that we're going to hope to do. We're going to do outdoors. And I say hope because we're still kind of watching, can crowds gather? And right now it's looking very, very optimistic.
It is.
But we've got the complete works of William Shakespeare, Abridged, Revised, which is kind of a zany take, on the Shakespeare plays. And then we have a newer play that we're going to present outdoors in the summer called Barbecue, that kind of deals with family tension as well as, you know, racial tension, but in a way that I think audiences are going to appreciate.
Of course, the goal is to get back into that beautiful theater you have on Fulton Avenue. It's the old Columbia Movie Theater.
Oh, yes.
And it's now home for the to the Evansville Civic Theater. So tell us about that venue, Kevin Roach.
Well, we've been there since 1974, and it's had such an interesting life. I'm not 100% certain what it was in the beginning, if it was a movie theater right away or if it was something else, because I, you know, the history has told me it was always built as a movie theater, but I'm looking things up that are, I'm finding out that, you know, it might have been like a store or something before that, because if you look at pictures of it prior to its renovation, it looks like a completely different building. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a different building until I looked closer. I'm like, no, that's the same building. They just retrofitted it. But it, you know, it was a movie theater for most of its life. And it held twice as, I wouldn't even say twice. We seat 222 and it seated over 500, I believe. And that was when they had the balcony. And of course the seating extended far beyond where we are, because there wasn't a, you know, a big stage there. It was a screen on the back wall.
And you have that classic marquee there.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
old school.
It needs some updating. Marquee. It needs some updating, but, you know, it needs some new wiring and things. And that's stuff we're hoping to do, but we want to keep that old school look because we like that. Mm-hmm. And for a while it, you know, lived its life as a beer garden, I think is the correct term, not a bar, a beer garden. And so, you know, we'll find things or remnants every now and then of that time period. And it's really, really, there's still shag carpeting upstairs in what was the projection room, because it was somebody's office. But the building is, it's on the top of my tip of my tongue. I wish I'd give you an exact date, but it's around 110, or so close to that. But, you know, we can't say we beat out the Alhambra, because Alhambra was built exclusively as a movie theater from the beginning. Whereas, as I understand it, this building wasn't. But like I said, sometimes you get different stories when you look into it, but that's what makes it so exciting for me.
Now, the matriarch I found out of the Evansville Civic Theater, Frances Llewellyn Golden, a New Harmony acting family, the Golden Troupe, I believe.
The Golden family was a troupe. They were based out of New Harmony. That was their home base. And the parents, the husband and wife, Martin and Bella, kind of basically from the get-go, when their kids were born, were like, you know, we're going to be a touring performing arts family. And like Frances started at like a year old. And they toured the entire country doing shows. And, you know, it's in a way they were kind of the celebrities of the time, you know, like we would think of, you know, movie stars or TV show actors today. You know, they were anticipated. They were, people knew their name and looked forward to them, but they would always go back to New Harmony, rehearse in New Harmony. You know, they are buried in New Harmony. They toured throughout the United States, 1875 to 1891. And then later, as Frances got older, when she graduated high school in 95, then she went to New York to study dramatic arts and came back to Evansville and did a lot of teaching for a while.
I think she taught music at the old Evansville College.
Mm-hmm, yep. And there's a lot of things we found about, you know, her classes at Evansville College. And eventually along the line, the Evansville Players or Evansville Community Players or something along those lines was formed that would later become the Evansville Civic Theater.
My guest is Kevin Roach. He's the artistic director at the Evansville Civic Theater. Now, before we talk about the talent pool in the Evansville area, let's find out more about Kevin Roach.
I grew up in Mount Vernon, Indiana, right here. So I've been kind of different places. I've mostly stayed in Indiana. I did try California for a bit, but that was back in 2009 when, you know, the things weren't so great because of the recession, and ended up coming back here. And it was very, serendipitous because when I, you know, I came back and I was so bummed and oh man, but when I came back, we found out that my father had cancer. And so, and he's in remission. He's very alive and well right now and very healthy, probably healthier than I am. But you know, I would have wanted to come back anyway. And so I came back here and just thought, well, I'm going to make the best of it. And I didn't realize that I would be directing in a theater.
Now, I think you said that your dad used to take you to plays at Mount Vernon High School?
Yes. My dad would take me to shows because he was the head custodian there. And so a lot of times he would clean up after the shows.
Sure.
And he would take me along and I would just sit and watch the show. And then, you know, he would clean and, you know, he only spent like maybe 30 minutes there and then he would take me home. It was Saturday night. I got to stay up late. And I would just sit in the theater and look at this empty stage after the show and be like, wow, you know.
Well, the costumes and mm-hmm. I guess the excitement.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. It was so, you know, these were like 15, 16-year-old kids that some of them I've talked to today, and I've got the chance to tell them, you know, like, you are the reason that I became so fascinated with this. Because they were celebrities to me, you know.
Sure.
They were high school kids.
Now, did you have any theatrical training when you went in college?
I did. I went to college for 2 years. And again, I had to come back because of a family situation that was private. But, you know, from that point, it's really just been my experience that I've learned from. I've worked with so many different people in so many different places. Owensboro, Kentucky here, you know, I've done some film in different cities and I've gotten the chance to, you know, work with different directors, different actors. And so like my process now as an actor director is the culmination of experience and all these different people that I've met. And that's really fascinating because I learned so much from that. And not that I'm knocking college or anything, but I learned so much from just doing and honestly failing at times. Then I feel like I did in a college setting.
And you've gone kind of full circle because you're back at Mount Vernon High School helping with the theatrical productions there.
Yes. I started back there again, actually right before I started at Civic or right around the time I started at Civic, just because I wanted the opportunity to direct. And, you know, they had done away with the drama program, which I still think is ridiculous, but you know, the kids were interested in theater, but it was a program that was really, I don't want to use the word dying, but there wasn't really a whole lot of interest in it. And you know, they were looking for somebody to just come in, direct the play, small stipend. And so I came in and did that and really got the program kind of up and running again and interest in it. And now kids are really excited about it. And that's not all me, but you know, I definitely came in guns a blazing. And you know, I picked some plays that were a little bit more, you know, I say edgy. We did Frankenstein, my first show, but of course it was big. I had explosions, I had projections, and, you know, I wanted to do something that the high school kids could get excited about. And I've been there ever since. It's still the same small stipend, but I do it because I love it.
Do you remember your first acting role?
Oh, goodness. My first acting role. I want to say that was the narrator in some adaptation of Paddington Bear in elementary school. That's the first I remember.
Uh-huh. What was your first paid acting gig?
It was a commercial. It was a commercial for something. It was either a commercial or a training video for a company, but it was for a corporate company. And that was the first time I ever got like a paycheck for doing it. And I took a picture. I was so proud. And it was only like $100 or something.
Sure.
But you know, to me, that was so exciting that I actually got paid for doing
this. What was
this.
The product or the company?
I believe it was – I don't remember the company, but I believe it was for cabinets, I want to say. So
there you go.
You know, it's real interesting that, you know, here I am this theatrical actor and like the first thing I do is basically a talk ad for a cabinet company.
But isn't that the pathway of most actors?
Yeah.
And that's how they get their start.
And a lot of actors I've talked to that are, you know, working professional actors now, you know, tell me my first paid gig wasn't in theater. It wasn't, it was a commercial. It was a radio ad. It was this. And, you know, I've talked to some actors that are much more high profile than I am. I could only hope to aspire to what they are that have told me that, you know, they've done voices for video games and things like that that are really popular. But yet that commercial they did where they just said, you know, buy Kleenex paid them way more than a popular
Sure.
video game ever did.
Acting and directing, you do both. Is there a favorite?
I always say I'm an actor at heart, but you know, right now I'm a director, and so anytime I can get the chance to act, especially in a play, I will take it and I cherish it. I fell into directing. It's, you know, it kind of started with, I did a college project when I was in college, a couple of them actually, where I
directed. Where'd you go to college?
Indiana University. And I did a couple shows just kind of on campus, real small scale. And I did one in Mount Vernon, you know, all of maybe like 25 people came to see it. But, you know, just real small scale stuff with my friends just to try to get some experience. And then I spent some time with a community theater in Owensboro called the Merely Players that kind of just did shows wherever they could. I worked with the artistic director there, Alan, and there was a time he couldn't step in for a show, I feel like I remember, and so he had to go out of town, and so I kind of took over there, and you know, that kind of started me on a rolling path of directing shows. And you know, I started to get asked to direct shows at, you know, the D'Alto Studios when that was a thing. And finally, Civic called when they needed somebody to step in and take over a show that was going to be directed by a guest director. And I'm like, you know, I don't have a ton of experience. And they still, you know, hired me on anyway. I did two shows just kind of as an interim director, a guest director, I should say, before I finally came in as artistic
director. What were those shows?
It was Wonder of the World and The Great Gatsby. Wonder of the World was absolutely hilarious. It's not one people have heard of, but it was just really, really zany and over the top. A bit too much for some people. Great Gatsby was a lot of fun to do. That was like, I considered that like the first like big whoa, you know, moment. Because, you know, here now I am on a big stage and I'm anticipating full houses because it's The Great Gatsby. And so I've got to get this one right. And I feel like I did. You know, would I do it differently? Maybe. But then after that was when they needed an artistic director, and that's where I came in.
Coming up, we're going to hear from Kevin Roach, from some of his peers.
Oh, goodness.
At the Civic Theater. Some interesting stories from them. Also, a ghost story or two. Is there a phantom in the old movie theater? A lot to talk about. Stay with us. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is Kevin Roach. He's artistic director of Evansville's Civic Theater, which is facing a kind of a rocky future during this COVID-19 pandemic. Shows canceled, little revenue coming in to keep the lights on, but hopefully that will change soon with more restrictions being lifted and the curtain will rise again at the theater on Fulton Avenue. We're crossing our fingers on that. So, Kevin, you and the theater community are eager to return to the stage, of course. A lot of talent out there. Tell us about the talent pool in the Evansville area.
It's so amazing because there's so many people here that I'm like, why are you here? You know, the same question that was asked to me way back when. Why are you here? You should be somewhere else doing this, big city. But, you know, for whatever reason, they're here, and I'm grateful for it. But we have such a good talent pool, and it never ceases to surprise me. Almost every show, somebody comes in, and I'm like, where do they come from? You know, what experience? We did a Christmas show. One of the last shows I did in the building was a just kind of a fun Christmas show, and we had this guy come in, and he auditioned, and I'm like, what, do you have any theater background? He's like, well, I did shows in high school, but I got kind of bored. I figured I'd do one, and I ended up using him because he was hilarious. He had great comedic timing, and, you know, so, you know, we have a lot of great women. You know, we don't see as many great men come out, but, you know, I think that's because they're afraid to, because when I do convince somebody to come out and audition, they're like, oh, I'm not that great. I'm in awe of what they can do. I tell my students at Mount Vernon that, you know, they always ask about my note-taking during auditions. They're the ones that ask, not the adults. I don't think they want to know. But, you know, they said, well, how do you take notes? And I said, you know, if you were to look at my notes, you would have no idea what I was trying to say. Because everything I underline, everything I circle, you know, I might put a check mark, all of that means something to my brain 24, 48 hours later when I finally go over it. You know, so I might write something like, where did they come from? And then I'll underline it 3 times. And then the next day I'll be like, oh, that means I really liked them. Mm-hmm. So
now, not only actors, but we've got great set designers, people involved with costumes, The lighting people, there's all kinds of opportunities there at the theater.
Yes, and when we're in the theater, we have so many opportunities for people, and I've gotten so many requests to help, and I'm like kind of sitting on it because right now there's not much people can help with. We're not in the building, but when we are in the building, we're going to need it. Our longtime technical director, Charles Julius, has just retired. He had planned his retirement well before COVID, so it wasn't anything COVID-related, and he had been there for I don't know how many years, but a very long time. I remember him being there when I was a kid. And, you know, I did a show there with a homeschool group when I was in high school. And he just would create sets that looked like a slice of life, like somebody just cut a living room of somebody's house and put it on our stage. And along with volunteers that help paint, you know, we have a longstanding volunteer, Katie Hahn, who comes in and does a lot of scenic painting. And so we're going to try to work with different volunteers and see kind of what sticks. Now, that may mean, and even with the pandemic, that may mean some of our shows are, I hesitate to use the term lower budget. That doesn't mean cheap. You know, we're still going to produce a quality show for people, but it might be more minimalistic scale back set. And then we'll have a couple shows in the season that we'll invite, kind of like I started, a guest designer to come in, and those will be kind of our big budget, big set shows. But without Charles, it's going to be interesting.
We're talking to Kevin Roach. He's the artistic director of the Evansville Civic Theater. And I'm curious about the process, the creative process of which shows to select.
We want to look for a drama. We try to think of a show that will appeal to a more broad audience. Some of these shows, they kind of fall into the category of, you know, oh, it's gotten boring because it's something we studied in school. And I'm like, I want to take this show and make it genuinely interesting and intriguing again. And I think the best comment I got was somebody came up to me, somebody knew me, and they're like, I don't remember The Crucible being so scary. And I'm like, well, yeah, it kind of is, you know. And it's historical fiction. It's not, you know, 100% fact. It's just based on something, you know. It's actually was written in response to the McCarthy communism era, and, you know, people getting blacklisted and accused of being communists when, you know, they either weren't or they were very peaceful people that weren't causing any trouble. And that, you know, and we actually kind of showed clips of those trials before the play even started, so people kind of knew this is why this was written. You know, you see the clock roll back from 1948 to 52 to 1692. We projected it. And then we just kept it really simple. The set was real, real basic, and we were able to borrow some costumes from USI, and that was very, very great. I was very happy that they let us do that. I had to end up stepping in. We had an actor drop out 2 weeks before the show opened. So I stepped in and ended up playing Judge Danforth, which coincidentally was the role I played in high school. So, you know, when they told me, my stage manager told me this person had dropped, I thought, well, that's at least it's appropriate, you know, for me.
I'm familiar with it.
I still went on stage that first weekend we did it. I had a book in hand, but, I took all the pages out and glued them into a leather-bound journal so it didn't look like a modern script. But, you know, we let the audience know that I was stepping in and that I would be in it.
I did reach out to the civic theater community to find out what it's like to act alongside and be directed by Kevin Roach. You might want to get a drink.
That's what I'm doing.
before we go into this, remember Chris Zinn.
Who can forget Chris Zinn?
Yeah, she's an over-the-top actress, a lot of roles. Now, she played the role of Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And you played McMurphy in that. And she described you as very intense. And for a long time, she assumed you didn't like her. And she said that became a running joke.
It has. And I don't know why she thought that. I mean, I am a very quiet person when I'm around a lot of people I don't know. And I knew some of the people involved in that, but I was getting to know. That was like some of them, it was my first experience with them. And so maybe I was just quiet around her. I don't know. That was one of my favorite productions I've been in. And that was directed by Chris Tyner, my predecessor at Civic. Great director. And he did such a great job. But that was an intense show. And she can talk. She was an intense actress. And I remember, and I don't know if she told this story, but there's a scene at the end where I'm supposed to get very, very angry with her, and I'm supposed to grab her by her nurse uniform and tear it. And it's rigged to tear just like two buttons. Mm-hmm. And one night I did it, and it tore the shirt pretty much completely open. And luckily, she was covered for the most part. But I got backstage, and I was, oh, I am so sorry. I am so, so sorry. I was embarrassed. Thoroughly embarrassed that that happened. But I don't know why she thinks I hate her. She always tells me that.
But. Now, she also says you shed your clothing to make everyone more comfortable during the first rehearsal of Calendar Girls.
Yes. That was our first rehearsal when we were taking clothes off. and that was such a neat show to do. That's one of my dad's favorite movies. And when I learned that they had adapted it into a play, and it was based on a real event, I got really excited to do it. And they kind of condensed the movie version down into a story that takes place in one room. And but it does inevitably get to the point where these middle-aged women are, you know, they're tired of the story. For those who don't know, these middle-aged women are kind of tired of seeing all these beautiful young girls on calendars. And, you know, they kind of get told, I would, you know, by men, I'd love to see a real woman on one of these calendars. And they're trying to raise money for their little club. And they've always done these little sales, safe, you know, non-offensive sales. And they decide, well, let's make the calendar that our husbands would want to see. And to the chagrin of some of their husbands. But you're very tastefully covered. And in the play, you know, nobody was ever 100% nude. It was the illusion of it. You know, they were always had things in front of them, but should those things fall, they had something on that, you know, to where you weren't going to see a fully nude person. But the first rehearsal we had where the clothes came off, they were just kind of in a swimsuit or underwear or whatever. And, you know, we closed that. Our rehearsals are closed mostly anyway, but I made sure nobody is here that doesn't need to be here. If they weren't called for that particular scene, they weren't in it, they didn't need to be here. And it just was kind of real stiff. And I'm sitting in the audience, you know, in my jeans and a shirt and my jacket. And I'm like, would it make you more comfortable if I got my underwear too? And it was, I think Chris was the one who was like, actually, yes. And so that's what I did. And I directed the rest of the rehearsal in my boxer briefs. And it lightened the mood and everybody had fun. And that was a fun show to do.
Well, another civic theater actor, Gretchen Ross, she's also a news anchor at WEHT-TV. She was in the cast of Noises Off.
Mm-hmm.
And she said when the cast and crew found out she was afraid of clowns, that triggered some chaos.
Oh, yes.
And tell us about that, Kevin.
Oh, gosh, I don't even remember all the details because that show is so chaotic. Again, that was another Chris Tyner show, but that show is a mile a minute. but Gretchen played opposite of me for the most part. And, you know, there's a show within a show. And I do remember she didn't like clowns. And so the cast members kind of conspired. And I can, you know, do like a good clown laugh. And so, you know,
evil clown
evil clown laugh. You know, and she hated it. And so we would just do things to kind of spook her. I feel like we brought something in, like a clown in or a costume or something.
She said she was chased.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's what it was. She was chased. One of us chased her, I think it was me that chased her, but she definitely let us know that that was not to happen again. And I never let it happen again.
There you go. Now, also heard from Lauren Singleton. She's the, the board president of the Civic Theater. And we're going to hear some of her comments later. We're going to save those. Those are some good ones, too. Involves an inflatable dinosaur costume and Doctor Who and Chewbacca, all kinds of stuff. So we're going to hear Lauren Singleton's comments later. Now, let's get into another topic here. Youth outreach, one of the goals of the Civic Theater. Tell us about your youth outreach, Kevin Roach.
When we are selecting plays, we try to pick one that piques the interest of local schools, whether that be here or in Posey County, and because, you know, we want to bring kids in there. It's my goal to bring those kids in there and introduce them to theater like they've never seen it before. And, you know, what I tell my cast there is kind of like what I said about my first experience is, you know, you're going to be the closest thing to a Broadway actor for some of these kids. You're going to be a star. And to me, that's exciting that kids walk out of there going, wow, that was really cool. And we also have our Next Wave educational program. And that is kind of, we bring in a guest director to do that. And it's always been up to this point, Clay Prindle. He is a great guy. He works at SEMO. And he comes in and he helps us kind of pick a show that I didn't want to say geared towards young people, but can be cast with a lot of young people. And then he'll choose a couple of adult actors that are seasoned actors to kind of act as mentors to them during the process. And so, you know, he's done a lot of fun shows throughout the seasons, even prior to me, that, again, they're not necessarily teenage characters in the shows, but they're shows that the age doesn't matter. And they've had a lot of fun with it. You know, they did You're in Town. They've done, I'm blanking. Goodness, they did Carrie the Musical, which was kind of a little bit more edgy, but was still well-received, very well-received, and a lot of fun. They did Chorus Line, where, you know, the characters in there are just out of high school and auditioning for shows. And, you know, so it's always a learning experience. Like with Carrie, that particular musical, a lot of people don't realize they kind of extract the horror element of it until the very end. And most of the show is really just about bullying and how this girl gets bullied. And so he actually brought somebody in to kind of do a workshop on bullying and how we can spot it, stop it, help others to, you know, become better and not do it, how to deflect it. And it was just a really neat experience. And that's what the Next Wave program is. And that's what we hope to do more of is, you know, it's not just doing a play. It's an educational experience. It's learning from older actors. It's, you know, getting people to come in and talk and workshop.
Of course, live performances, anything can happen during a live performance, and sometimes the unexpected happens, like the ripping of the shirt there.
Oh,
that
yes.
wasn't really in the script. So any other things that you can remember that happened, that you had to improvise afterward?
Oh, goodness. I have a penchant for injuring myself on stage as an actor. It's almost become kind of a running gag, is that what's going to happen to me now? In One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and, you know, I got really sick. I don't know if I had the flu or what, but there was one performance where I had a fever. I could hardly stand up, and my doctor gave me some meds, and particularly just to get me through the weekend, a pain med, and I took it, and I don't remember much of that performance, but I had people come up to me and tell me, oh my gosh, you did so great. I'm like, well, I went backstage and laid on the gurney most of the time, you know, just waiting to go on, and, you know, I did it. I've had my hand cut on stage by a razor that was used instead of a blunt one. In Cuckoo's Nest too, actually, I accidentally punched a guy in the mouth. That was the only punch I've ever thrown that made contact with somebody's face. I stepped in. It was my fault, too far, and busted the guy's lip. See, what else has happened? I've fallen and torn my wrist during a production of Macbeth, torn a tendon in my wrist, still sword fought with it.
Any set malfunction?
There was a show I directed at D'Alto Studio called The Curious Savage. It's one of my other favorite plays, and that's a very, very sweet show, but also very funny. It's comedy with heart. And there's a scene where one of the sons who's angry that his mother is not telling them where the inheritance is because they're just greedy, he's going to storm out. And it was Leo, the one I just described as comedic master. And he goes to storm out, and he grabs the door, and he does this gag where he opens the door, and it hits his head, and then he gets it open and storms out. The whole door frame came off. and I'm just in the booth just kind of – I didn't even freak out. I just sighed heavily. And he ran with it, you know. And the other actor on stage, I think his line was something like, you know, look, you've angered him. Look what he stormed out. And he said something akin to, look, you've angered him. He tore the door off its hinges. And so during intermission, you know, our stage manager was very quickly trying to reattach it.
Well, we've got much more to talk about with Kevin Roach, the artistic director of the Evansville Civic Theater. The adrenaline rush of performing before a live audience. Mm-hmm. I know there's got to be something there. And also hearing that belly laugh, or maybe a sigh, or maybe deadly silence, the worst, right? Mm-hmm. And so those ghost stories, we've still got those in the wings, and also those comments from Lauren Singleton. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. 2 Main Street presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. If you are just joining us, my guest is Kevin Roach. He's artistic director of the Evansville Civic Theater, 95 years in the community, facing a serious challenge during COVID-19, which has kept the theater dark. No productions and no ticket sales. Hopefully that's going to change very soon. Community theaters, of course, waiting for that green light to start planning those new productions. Now, Kevin, we talked earlier about the excitement of live theater. You can't beat that. Every show a little bit different. And tell us about the adrenaline rush before, during a production, maybe afterwards as well. Do you have to motivate the actors at all?
We usually do kind of like a very vocal, physical energy warm-up beforehand if I think it's a cast that needs a little oomph before we get going. But, you know, when they hear that crowd start coming in, usually it fixes itself. I've had a couple shows that didn't click fully until there was an audience, and I'm like, there it is. There's what we've been working towards. And but as an actor, it's different as a director, it's different as an actor. As an actor, you get on stage and you realize there's people watching you. And so, yeah, that produces that kind of adrenaline rush, and you hear that laughter, and you hear that silence that you're like, oh, no, that's not good. I'll round back to that as a director in a second. Okay. And I've forgotten that until I had to step into the Crucible, and I was on that stage again, and I'm director and actor, and I'm like, okay, there's two conflicting feelings. Like, now I have stage fright almost, and that's not something I've ever had. Now, as a director, I get to kind of stand in the back and hear the audience's reaction, or in some cases see them depending on the lighting. And unlike with actors, you can only see like maybe 2 rows back, 3 rows at most, before it just goes total darkness. And, you know, sometimes those silences aren't necessarily bad. Sometimes, you know, I jokingly say there's the audiences that are enjoying it and find it hysterical because they tell me, but they're like, it's good, funny. And then they just cross their arms and keep their mouth shut the rest of the show. But they'll tell me after the show, oh, it's hilarious, it's great, it's wonderful. So I tell them, you know, no, they think it's funny. And then there's some shows where the silence is just in response. I mean, it's just like shock and awe in response. Lord of the Flies, that was a show where like there were nights where the audience was gasping and very drastic, and there were times when the audience was quiet. But, you know, they would come out and say, well, that was intense. So quiet doesn't always mean necessarily bad. But, you know, as a director, I see the people coming in, and I help in the box office and work in the box office. And so I see these crowds coming in. I see people getting tickets late. So it's kind of a different energy for me. My energy is, you know, it kind of ends once the show starts. You know, once the show begins, my job is technically done. I get to watch it with everybody else. I do pace a lot and back, kind of back and forth. I have my quirks, but I get to enjoy it with everybody else. So it's kind of a fascinating energy, because now I'm an audience member. I'm no longer a director. I'm not an actor. I'm just watching it. You know, the only thing I have above the audience is I know what happens next. Mm-hmm. We were doing a show right when the pandemic hit that we had to kind of put on pause. That was part of our underground series called Man from Earth, and I was in that one, and that was probably one of the few times I did get not nervous, but did get a little kind of like, ooh, the blood's pumping, because the playwright contacted me and was like, hey, can I get a ticket? I want to watch. And so, again, you never know who's going to watch. But no, I never really feel nervous as an actor. I get more nervous as a director, really. But that one time in The Crucible, I think it was because my brain was split in two. I walk on that stage for the first time, and you know, it's what I would consider an actor's nightmare. I'm looking at a script in my hands, trying not to keep my face in it the whole time. So I actually, there was one moment where I did kind of lose my place and my actors had to save me, but
Now, you talked about, you said you do have some quirks.
Ah, yeah.
Are there some superstitions involved with these productions? That
there are
routines that you go through?
There are some. There are superstitions. I will tell the more funny quirks right now. To start with, I very rarely say I like it or I love it. My quote is that everybody knows, and everybody that knows me is listening right now, they're saying it in their head, I don't hate it. And that was something I started when I was directing at Civic, is I would get, you know, suggestions from, you know, like people like Leo, who's very zany and comedy driven, and say, do you like it? And I'm like, well, I don't hate it, which usually means I'm gearing more towards liking it. And now that's just become my catchphrase is, you know, I don't hate it. And but, you know, and during shows, I'll kind of pace back and forth. My actors tell me I perch a lot, like when I'm directing a scene, when we're, especially when we're rehearsing in a different space, like, you know, when we would be building sets on our stage, we'd rehearse at a local church, and I'd get one of the hard metal chairs and I would sit on it like a bird on the back of it, just taking notes. You know, I wouldn't actually sit in the chair like a normal human being. And apparently I do that more than I think I do. But I am superstitious about some things. I still don't want to say, you know, Macbeth in a theater. And I used to never be superstitious about that, but it just kind of grew on me. Now, granted, I don't go through the rigmarole of, oh, no, you've said it, you have to backtrack. But anytime somebody does say it, I do have that moment of like, oh no, you know, please don't.
Now, let's go from superstitions to hauntings. Any tales to tell about things that may go bump in the night behind the curtain?
It depends on who you talk to. You know, our technical director that retired would tell you, no, there's nothing going on there. But, you know, he's a man's very driven by science. I mean, I am too, but I also believe in the supernatural a little bit. I joke that I don't see things as much as everybody around me does. You know, I've heard stories from, you know, Chris, who directed there previously, and, you know, volunteers have said they've seen a figure, you know, in our lobby, or like they'd be on stage kind of relaxing after the show, and they would think they saw somebody standing around the corner, which it is kind of dark, but the biggest story I've heard is when you walk in, we have stairs going up two directions. One goes up to my office. The other goes up to the women's restroom. And they were stairs that would have originally led to the balcony, which is now our technical area, booth and storage. And I've had so many people tell me that they've seen someone at the top of the stairs. They've seen someone peeking around the corner. A lot of people have heard, you know, voices or thought that somebody was talking. I heard that, you know, where I thought somebody was in the building when they weren't. Or the other night, I actually was there with a couple of friends. They were helping me sort some costumes. And we were just sitting talking, and it sounded like a seat. And it took me a while to figure out that's what the sound was. Somebody pushed a seat down and then let it go back up. It makes a very distinct noise. And you know, I'll always try to look for the rational explanation, but I'm like, I don't really have one because they don't stick, you know, they don't stick down. And, but we did actually have a lady come through. She's a friend of mine. She does historic ghost tours in New Harmony, Jody Mahan. And I hope she's okay saying my name. She's a wonderful lady, and she's written a lot of books about the supernatural, both fiction and nonfiction. And she came through, and I was like, just kind of tell me what you feel. And she reconfirmed a lot of things people had said, that there's, you know, she said, you know, she said, don't tell me anything. And she came in, she said, do a lot of people see figures on the stairs in the balcony? And one of the stories is a woman in a red dress, and I've kind of seen that before, just briefly. And, you know, we were doing it's called a spirit box, but it kind of channels through radio frequencies. And I'm still on the fence of what I think about those, but, you know, I said, is there a woman here? And it very clearly, the word red came out of it. And I said, oh, okay, are you happy here? And the voice said something like, are you serious? And so I was like, okay, well, we're done with that. The weirdest thing, though, that I think I've experienced there, and again, there's so many stories. One of her actors returned a script one night in the mail slot, and his girlfriend was you know, had the headlight beams aimed at the building across the street. And she said somebody was in that lobby and followed you all the way to the door and then stood at the door when nobody was there. But is apparently the phenomena of seeing me, which is really, really strange. I've had more than one person say, weren't you just in the other room? And I'm like, no, I've been here the whole time. I had one of our employees in the past had told me, I came down and I said, hey, do you have a second? And she looked at me really, really confused. And she said, well, I'm going to make a phone call. I'll holler up in a minute. And I came back down and I said, are you okay? And she said, well, I saw you come down the stairs and you looked frustrated and you rushed into the theater and I didn't think anything of it until 5 seconds later you came down the stairs to ask me if I had a second. And that's not the only time I've heard that story. So I really hope there's not some weird universe where I'm a ghost there. I'm hoping it's just weird mind tricks. Okay. But we've got the ghost stories. Apparently we have 6 or 7 ghosts is what I'm told.
There you go. Now, I don't want to forget these comments from Lauren Singleton. She's the board president of the Evansville Civic Theater. She said, Kevin pours his heart and soul into the business and productions. He has a great love for Doctor Who. He quotes episodes from Doctor Who, and especially the 12th Doctor.
Yes.
And he met the actor Peter Capaldi?
Mm-hmm. Peter Capaldi.
Tell me about that.
Well, the basics of Doctor Who is a time-traveling alien that looks like a human, and they have the perfect way to keep the show running is every time an actor is done playing the role, you know, his whole thing is when he or she, right now it's a woman, dies, they basically turn into a completely different person with the same memories, but different personality quirks, a different body. And so that's
a great gig for actors.
Oh, gosh, they just keep recycling them. And so Peter Capaldi was the 12th Doctor, as he was known. And he was not very liked right away because he was, you know, they had all for a while been kind of young and hip and fun and zany. And he kind of came in as like a curmudgeonly older man. And over time, he morphed into this kind of, you know, hey, I used to have fun person. But I got to meet him at a convention and I was really excited to meet him because I was given an opportunity a few years ago. I had my cousin's husband needed a kidney, and to make a very long story short, it turned out, even though we're not blood related, I was a match, and I was still on the fence kind of about it. It was a very scary decision, and he had some wonderful, wonderful quotes on that, but one of his last quotes in the show is, you know, he said, I do what I do because it is right, because it is decent, and it's kind. It's just that. It's kind. And after that, I was like, done. We're doing it. And so I did it, and I got to meet him, and I told him that story, and he said, we don't think of our show as being something that's going to be life-altering. He's like, to us, it's, and, you know, I told him I was an actor. He's like, you get it. It's just entertainment. He's like, so I love when these people tell me these stories that he really made a difference in their lives.
That's a great story. Yeah. Okay, now she says, you also have an inflatable dinosaur costume.
Yes, I do.
I guess, do you run around frightening people with that or delighting people?
More like delighting than, I was going to say, making them laugh. For years, I've done this raptor impression since high school. I can't do it as much now because my voice isn't as high as it used to be. It's a little scratchy these days, but when I go to this, you know, nerd convention, it's called Dragon Con, and I went 2 years in a row, and the first year we noticed that, like, people were walking around with inflatable dinosaur costumes. There was a dino party. And so the second year, I was like, I'm going to get a raptor. And so Jurassic World or Jurassic Park had their own raptor inflatable instead of a T-Rex. And so I was like, I'm going to get it. But, you know, I've turned it into just, I keep it at the theater anytime I need it. And, you know, I put it on one night to just make our volunteers laugh. And we just did a telethon to benefit the local theater organizations. And I put it on for no reason whatsoever, just because it's super fun to do.
And she says, when you yawn, you sound like Chewbacca.
Yes.
From Star Wars. And she says, that always makes her smile.
Oh, goodness. And it's so funny that people know me years. They'll hear me yawn, and I'll be like, how did you not know this? Like, what is that noise? I can't replicate it. I couldn't do it right now if I tried. But when I yawn, my vocal cords vibrate, and it makes that kind of Chewbacca sound. And I really have been hoping it would happen during the process of this, but it hasn't happened because I've had my coffee.
Well,
yes.
I hope our listeners are enjoying this and the fact that when you're involved with theater, you have a lot of fun.
Yes.
It's a fun group. Everybody seems to get along and enjoy the camaraderie. So how can folks support the Evansville Civic Theater, Kevin Roach?
I always direct them to our website, evvcivic.org. We got a whole new website to simplify it, just evvcivic.org. And we've got everything on there from our shows that are happening to auditions to volunteer opportunities to donation opportunities. And we've got still got our big capital campaign going on right now that we started amidst the pandemic to kind of get some funds in because, you know, that was when we were faced with what do we want to do? And we all agreed on the board, myself, we want to keep fighting, but that's going to take donations. And that is still true. We've raised around $30,000 and that's great. But there, believe me, when I say there is still more needed to be able to continue going, stay in that building and keep the theater alive. We are cautious. We are optimistic, but we also are cautious about it and taking every precaution to make sure we continue for another 95 years.
And you have a final comment here that you wanted to share?
Sure, I do. You know, and I think it's so fascinating. We have a volunteer who is kind of going through our historical archives that have been in boxes upstairs. And, you know, we don't know when they just got boxed away at some point. But we found a lot of newspaper articles, especially on Frances, our founder, and a lot of photos of her and personal belongings. I've held some of her notes in my hands, which probably in retrospect wasn't the smartest thing because they're very frail. So we've started wearing gloves when we go through some of these things. But there was a point where she quoted in her biography, she said, Frances recalled that the community players, which is what it was called, community players or Evansville community players, the community players had, quote, survived a depression, a terrible flood, and a war during the 20 or so years since it had been organized, which at this time is when it was written. She said, it seems to me that there must be something very worthwhile about such a type of art and the club that supports it, meaning the people that back it. And I read that and I thought, well, that's exactly what's happening now, is we're at another point where shows had to stop, and are we going to get to continue them? And I'm sure the theater then thought the same thing. And it was just so fortuitous that we found that quote, because I'm like, this is exactly what we're doing, is we were trying to come out on the other end. And add to that, we came out of a war, a flood, a depression, and a pandemic, and we're still here. And it takes a special kind of community supporting that to make that happen. As a nonprofit theater, the community, the city of Evansville, they're going to be the people who ultimately decide, does live performance art at the Civic Theater continue or not?
And that was a quote from Frances Llewellyn Golden, The matriarch of the Evansville Civic Theater. Well, Kevin Roach, thank you for being my guest, and thanks for sharing your passion for community theater, keeping it alive and well, even during a pandemic. This has been a lot of fun,
yes.
And I hope we get people all excited about returning to the Civic Theater when this is all over with.
Me too. I'm ready to get back in there. Thanks for having me. This has been great.
You're welcome. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management.